A cold gray day. The snow lay packed and deep, but it had a frozen crust, and walking wasn't difficult. The explosion blew out windows and doors all through that section of the research wing. Ryan smelled the fire from the burners and saw thick black chemical smoke billow out into the rest of the complex. It took them less than 20 unchallenged minutes to make their way around the outside of the Institute and up toward the guarded sec barrier on the hillside at the neck of the valley. Ryan had anticipated trouble there, but the five or six sec men came out, hands high, weaponless. They had seen what had happened below and wanted no part of a fight. Ryan led the friends down the far side of the steep blacktop on their way toward the redoubt.
I wish that we could simply make our way around this blighted country as God intended. We have seen in the last few days the sorry results of man setting himself over nature. By the three Kennedys! But I would be a happier man if these matter transmitters had never been invented and over Project Whisper had died along with the malignant brains that invented it.
Come on, Doc. Think of the excitement of never knowing where you're going to end up.
Better to travel hopefully than to arrive, my dearest lady? We shall see.
They all walked into the gateway chamber itself, with its dark gray armaglass walls. Christy sat between Dean and Mildred, leaving a space beside her for Ryan to occupy, after he'd closed the outer door and triggered the jump mechanism.
Hope we don't all end up getting cloned.
I'm with you on that. Even one Doc Tanner's one too many.
Before the old man could reply, Ryan was with him. The door firmly shut. He sat, feeling the familiar swirling in his brain, like feathery, exploring fingers. The discs and floor and ceiling began to glow, and the white mist appeared in the chamber. He reached and clasped Christy's hand in his, feeling the warmth and reassurance of her touch. Ryan closed his eye and entered the darkness. Deathlands Genesis Echo is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, James Axler. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, Michael Replogle, Kate Torrey, Christopher Graybill, Sonny Lasky, Michael Glenn, Barbara Pinellini, James Lewis, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Carlos Anderson and Johan Detweiler. Graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry and Temeskin Wubna. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Nathaniel Perry and Temeskin Wubna. Book adapted for graphic audio by Casey Jones. If you enjoyed Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for the next episode of Mark Dalton, Owner-Operator. Graphic Audio presents Mark Dalton, Owner-Operator by Ido Van Belkom. Copyright 2007, Ido Van Belkom. Performed by David Coyne and the Graphic Audio Players. Episode 6, Just in Time.
Mark Dalton spent two more days in Collingwood driving cast and crew around to different locations in the production company van, using his rig to move the wind machines twice. When the production was done with the machines and the police were finished asking him questions about the assistant director who tried to kill him, Mark was paid by the production company's accountant for his time on the set. The administrative people were also very careful to get the correct spelling of his name, so they would get it right in the movie's closing credits. He would be listed as one of the film's four drivers, which would make the video a neat thing to have, even though it hadn't starred Shannon Tweed. As Mark cruised down Highway 400 toward Toronto and the downtown studio where he was to deliver the wind machines for a CBC production of Shakespeare's The Tempest, he fished his cell phone out of his jacket pocket and called up his dispatcher, Bud. He'd be finished with the load by 5 that afternoon, and it would be nice to have a new load to wake up to.
Hello.
Don't you say dispatch anymore?
Dispatch? Who the hell are you?
It's Mark, Bud. Mark Dalton.
What do you want, Dalton?
I'm coming into Toronto tonight, and I'm looking for something for tomorrow morning.
What's the matter? Parking brake not working on your rig?
If I stay too long in the city, I might be tempted to visit my ex-wife. And that's just more trouble than it's worth.
Sorry, Dalton, I ain't got nothing for tomorrow or the day after. And the load I have for Thursday was already snapped up. Call me tomorrow, see what I have then.
Okay, talk to you later.
Fucking idiot.
Mark was not looking forward to spending a couple of days in Toronto. Jokes about his wife aside, Toronto was a tough place to find somewhere to park a rig, and an even tougher place in which to drive one. He was sure he'd be able to find something to do, but he just didn't like the idea of sitting and waiting around when hundreds or maybe even thousands of loads were heading out of Toronto and none of them were hooked up to the back of his rig. As he neared the city, Mark was lucky to hit the 401 in the middle of the afternoon when traffic wasn't too bad. He drove east across the top of the city to the Don Valley Parkway and took that south. After he got off at the bottom of the DVP near the lake, it took him an hour to find the film studio in an area that seemed to be littered with what looked like bombed-out factories and warehouses. However, once he'd found the place, he was done in less than 20 minutes. He headed back up the DVP and went east again on the 401, on his way to Scarborough. He checked into the nearby Days Inn, where a lot of truckers spent the night. After he brought his stuff up to his room, he headed down to the coffee shop for a sandwich and a coffee. As he entered the shop, he saw several familiar faces, including that of Johnny Jones, a driver in his early 20s that Mark had helped get his first rig. The young man didn't look too well, with an empty coffee cup and an ashtray full of cigarette butts sitting on the table in front of him.
Hey, Johnny Jones, how goes the battle?
Shitty.
Let me get something to eat. I'll be right with you.
Mark bought an egg salad sandwich, just like Benny Cooperman, one of his favorite literary detectives, always ordered, and a couple of coffees for him and Johnny.
You look terrible. What's going on?
I've been working for JJ&G for 6 months now, and everything had been okay, you know?
Already, Mark didn't like where this was headed. He'd never driven for JJ&G, but he'd heard plenty of stories from other drivers. They were one of those companies that had gotten big quickly, on the backs of a lot of naive and unsuspecting drivers.
And sometimes they charged me a little more here and there, but, you know, they always had a good load for me. I thought I was doing pretty good by them.
So what happened?
My last trip out was 15 days. I went from Toronto to San Francisco to Vancouver to Edmonton, back to Vancouver, again to Edmonton, and then on into Toronto. When I got back, I handed in all my bills of lading into the office at one time. This month, their check arrived, and it didn't have payment for the trip west to Vancouver or the second trip into Edmonton.
What did they say happened?
Well, they said they don't have the bills of lading for those loads. I don't know how that can be. I handed them all in at one time. And they said they're looking for them, but who knows if they'll ever find them. And now I want to take on a new load, but I really can't afford to. I'm already out $6,000, and if I take on another job with this company and they stiff me again, I could be $10,000 in the hole. And if I don't take another load for JJ&G, I doubt I'll ever see any part of that $6,000 they owe me.
It was a tough spot for a young guy to be in. Hell, for anybody to be in. And it was a shame, too, since here was a nice young kid ready to work hard to make a living, but some black-hearted bean counter figures it's more important to keep the books looking good than to treat his operators fairly.
I got a mortgage, a kid on the way, and a wife that's this close to walking out the door.
What about your rig?
How many payments do they let you miss before they take it away from you?
Mark closed his eyes and shook his head. Most companies with trucks on the road were good, reputable firms that paid on time and showed a little respect for their drivers. And then there were these other companies. Companies that didn't think twice about pulling the rug out from under some young guy who's hardly put any rubber on the road. And they got away with it more often than not because they held all the cards. They had the work. They held the money. And all the operator had was a need to provide for himself and his family, which more often than not forced him to take whatever crumbs the company decided to give him.
What am I gonna do, Mark? What am I gonna do?
I don't know. Give me some time and maybe I'll think of something. You're not the first owner-operator this has ever happened to, and you know you won't be the last either. And that's what really sucks about this whole thing.
Stuff like this ever happen to you?
Early on, plenty of times, yeah.